I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club. A daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Part of it, that's what we have to really start to come to grips with our kids, is they're spending money on their phone, their watch, their fingertip, right? Hitting a button and it automatically scans to a bill. This is going to make it harder and harder for them to understand when they're spending money and how it impacts them long term.
Welcome back to Everyone's Talking Money. I am your host, Shauna, and it is so good to have you here. All right, I have a favor to ask you. I would love to get this show to more listeners, but I need your help. Can you share this episode or the podcast as a whole with your network and friends today? That would mean so much to me and will help keep this show a free resource for so many years to come. All right, I have something to share with you. A recent survey from Thriving Wallet. This might not surprise you, but it found that 90% of Americans say money impacts their stress level. So how do we ever change this? Well, It starts actually by raising kids comfortable with money and giving them the tools to make smart money decisions. Our guest, Adam Carroll, a renowned financial literacy expert, celebrated author, and speaker who has delivered over 1,000 speaking engagements. He also has a TED Talk with over 6 million views. He has some ideas on how to teach your kids about money that will change everything for you and your kids. He believes it starts with getting cash in your kids' hands early from a young age, 5 or 6 years old. Give them a few dollars per week and have them start paying for things, ice cream, movie tickets, whatever it might be. This teaches kids that there is a finite supply of money. But there's a bigger picture here that we need to talk about. And that's that most of us didn't understand this when we were kids. How you as parents talk about money, interact with money, or don't talk about money, it directly impacts your kids' relationship with money growing up, is really also at the root of how they're going to spend and save their money going forward. This is programmed into us as kids. So to raise kids who are smart with money, Adam says, you have to be aware how you as the parent interact with money. You are going to leave this episode with so many great tips and ideas that you can start putting into practice right now to help your kids start making smart money choices. But before we start talking, just a quick reminder, my signature course, Un-F Your Money, is open from enrollment just for a few more days until April 3rd, and I would love for you to join us. There is a spot for you, my friend. If you want to make some serious changes with your money and you really want to work on how you feel about money, you won't want to miss this course. It is, I have to tell you, it is so, so good. You can use code ETM at checkout and get $100 off. I have the link right in the show notes, or go to etmlearn.com. That is etmlearn.com. All right, let's start talking. Adam, welcome back to Everyone's Talking Money. It's so good to have you with us.
Shana, it's so good to be back. I had so much fun with you before. I figured why not come back for a repeat session.
Do it again, right? I love it. Well, your TED Talk, which I'm going to link in the show notes for everyone to take a listen to, it has been viewed over 6 million times, which, I mean, that is just an achievement in itself. But I think the reason that it has is because it's just this great story. You talk about playing this game of Monopoly with your kids and how you were playing just with the Monopoly money, right? The fake money. And you noticed maybe exactly playing by the rules. And then you decided to kind of change up the game and actually play with real money. So you are probably way better at telling this story. I'd love for you to just share a little bit about this like amusing experiment that you did with your kids.
Yeah. Thank you for teeing it up that way too, because it was an experiment. I mean, honestly, we're a game playing family. So we love to play ball games, dice games, card games, board games. But the kids love playing Monopoly. Especially when they were young. And I think, in all honesty, looking back on it, they like to roll the dice. They like to move the pieces. You know, they like the game atmosphere from that perspective. But I noticed one Saturday that they were playing outside the rules. They were like buying each other out of jail and loaning each other money to buy properties. And I probably had come back from a week of travel. And I was like, why are these games taking 6 hours? You know? And
how old are your kids?
So my kids,
how old were they then?
They, at that point, they were 6, 8, and 10.
Okay.
And today they're 16, 18, and 20. And so it was a while ago. I mean, every time somebody says, oh man, this talk has 6 million views and it keeps encroaching on 7 million. I'm like, yeah, it was 10 years ago. So it's kind of amazing, but looking back, it really revolutionized how we raised our kids around money. And I think, one of the things that got me inspired to do this experiment, Shana, was I had been on a college campus and just, I think, the week before, and what I'd asked students were some really pointed questions around money. And the answer I got was kind of like, I don't know. You know, they didn't have any clue because they weren't making their own financial decisions. And as I'm watching my kids play, I'm like, well, the money isn't real. That's why they're not making any decisions, because on a college campus, it's not real. And so it occurred to me, what if the money were real? And that's what led to this grand experiment.
I love this, right? I think just human nature, right? You sub in real money and it sort of changes the stakes. And I think it's really fascinating, even as adults, when when you're dealing with your money versus, you know, maybe you're on a date and somebody else is paying for something, or I don't know, you know, whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
Emotionally, it's just such a different experience. So I'm wondering, I thought this would be fun, like just to sort of hit the mark as we start off. From this experiment and like from what you've learned about specifically kids and money, what would you say is like the top tip that you think we all need to know to raise kids who like actually have their money shit together?
Yeah. This is a big deal because I think as parents, societally, we have sort of grown accustomed to the idea that I love my kids and therefore I don't want them to struggle.
Yes.
And so we remove all obstacles of struggle from their lives, including and right up to all the money decisions they're going to make until they're in college and beyond. And this is probably the most detrimental thing that a parent can do for their child if they want a kid who stands on their own 2 feet financially. So the number one lesson I think learned and the rule or tip I would give to your listeners is start getting money in your kids' hands. And when I say money, I'm talking tangible dollars as early as humanly possible, and then force decision-making down to them. So they actually make decisions with cash and they feel the pain of like, I'm handing over a $20 or a $50 bill and it hurts, versus getting to a point where they're like, Mom, will you order me these Legos on Amazon? And they don't feel any pain. All they want is the pleasure of it showing up at the doorstep.
Yeah, because there is a lot of pain as an adult, and I think you don't feel that as a kid. You talked about something in your TED Talk called financial abstraction.
Yep.
And I think this is really interesting because I can think back to my childhood. I used to share a phone line with my brother, and that was like a big deal, right? He was 5 years older, and the fact that we had our own phone line was, you know, we felt very cool.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
But yeah, I lived in Los Angeles and I had a friend who lived probably like, I don't know, 20 miles from me, but she was in a different area code. And so I didn't realize it, but at the time, you know, it's not like calling now, but at the time there was this big cost for me, like sitting on the phone with her for hours and hours.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents, you know, coming up to me and like, what? You know, the phone bill was just like hundreds of dollars. And I had absolutely no clue that this was a case that like this was happening.
Totally.
And so, you know, like what is happening psychologically that, you know, we don't care about money if it's someone else's? Like, do you know any of the science behind like what's going on in our brains that actually makes us really care when it's our money we're spending?
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting distinction here, because whether it's someone else's money or it's not tangible money, it's probably one and the same. So when, and I'm just going to throw this back to you if you don't mind, but if you had a $50 or $100 bill, would it be hard for you to break it? Do you usually hold on to those?
If I had a $50 or $100 bill, yeah, it's probably hard to break it. It probably would sit in my wallet for quite a while.
Yeah. And most people that I ask, they're like, yeah, I never really want to break big bills. For whatever reason, makes me feel abundant. Oh, if I break it, then it's easier to spend. Whatever the case might be, we all have reasons behind it. Psychologically, what's happening is if I hand over a $50 bill at a store, there's a pain sensor that goes off in my brain that says, ooh, this is painful because I'm giving up this, you know, healthy sum of money in exchange for a thing, but there's a sense of loss that goes along with it. However, if I'm online and I hit one click ship on Amazon for $47, I'm in positive anticipation of that thing showing up. So it's actually a pleasure sensor that goes off in my brain. And if we're spending someone else's money, as an example, it's not a pain sensor because there's nothing attached to, you know, oh, I'm not really at a loss here. The company is, right? It's easy for someone to go out and spend money on the company card. But if it was their own money, they might feel a little bit differently because there's this detachment from the pain sensor going off in our brain. And I think that's at the heart of the abstraction of money, is more and more, certainly the financial industry wants to separate us from the feeling of pain when we spend.
Yes.
And even today, think about it, Shauna, when you go spend money with a credit card, used to be you had to insert, well, first of all, you had to like slide the stripe and you'd slide it over and over again until the thing booped or beeped at you. And then
Old school, right?
we'd insert the chip until the thing took. And now what do we do? Tap, green light, green light, green light. Okay, you're good to go. It doesn't even feel like you're spending. It's just like tap, move. That abstraction makes it easier and easier for us to spend. And I think at the heart of it, that's what we have to really start to come to grips with our kids, is they're spending money on their phone, their watch, their fingertip, right? Hitting a button and it automatically scans to a bill. This is going to make it harder and harder for them to understand when they're spending money and how it impacts them long term.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think about it because we're old enough that as kids, we didn't have some of these luxuries. We didn't have a cell phone. We didn't have Amazon. We didn't have, you know, push of a button. You could order anything. I mean, I still remember, it's going to really date me, but I still remember getting like the JCPenney catalog in the mail, you know, and it was like 500 pages thick or something like that, and going through and like dog earing all the pages of, you know, all the things that I wanted. But there was the separation between what you wanted and what you actually got in a very different way. And so I really feel for, you know, everyone listening who is, you know, giving birth to kids or has young kids right now and thinking about how to navigate the world and teaching money when everything is so easy.
Yeah, it is. It requires a new set of standards on how we raise kids around money. And this is where the conversation often comes up when we talk about this, of like, well, what will happen to cash? Will cash go away and we'll become a totally digital society? And I think the short answer is yes. But while we still have it here, one of the keys, going back to my original comment, is start getting cash in your kids' hands when they're young. And I'm talking like 5, 6, 7 years of age. The way we did it with our kids is they got a dollar per year of age per week. So my 5-year-old got $5 a week, 10-year-old got $10 a week. And $40 might seem like a lot for a 10-year-old over a month's time, but we would start to force decision-making down to them. So if they wanted that thing at Target, or they wanted to go to a ball game or go get ice cream on a weekend, we would say, that's fine, but you're going to use your money to do it. And what it did was it started to teach them that, number one, there was a finite supply of that thing that they were using to get what they wanted. And what it did for my wife and I was it stripped us of the necessity of being like, oh yeah, whatever you want is yours for the taking. Because, you know, I mean, we were both teenagers once. It's easier to spend our parents' money than it is our own.
For sure. It's still easier.
It's still easier. I'm 48. It's still easier to spend my parents' money than it is my own. But when my kids got to the age of 14 and they had a few thousand dollars in savings, and they knew, like, if you want a new iPhone, that's on you. That's not on me. I'll pay for your service for a period of time, but the phone is on you. When it comes time to buy a car, you know, I will match whatever you save, but that means if you save $2,500, I'll put in $2,500 and you're going to go get a $5,000 car. We had rules set in place for our kids that really emphasize savings, really emphasize putting money away and understanding delayed gratification. But ultimately, they had ownership. And the ownership piece is what most 18 to 24-year-olds are missing today when I go speak on college campuses, because they're like, I don't know, my dad takes care of it. You know, which I think is, it's basically like sending your child out in a rowboat without any oars in the middle of an ocean and being like, good luck, pal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's going to be like a 60-foot wave coming at you, but, you know, you'll be fine.
Totally. No problem. Yeah. Hold on tight. Here's a sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good luck. I'm thinking about, you know, it's probably inevitable with your first kid, right? You're fumbling through teaching them about money. You're trying to figure out how to do this, but maybe you don't teach them anything about money because it's so stressful to yourself. And we know that money is emotional and that it's often those irrational emotions that kind of get in the way of making decisions that we want to make with our money. So how do we proactively teach about money when, for us as a parent, it feels so scary? Or maybe there's been trauma, or you know, maybe money is tight. Like, how do we not infuse that into our kids?
Yeah, great question. And I think the necessity to go deep into what some of those traumas were growing up is essential to figuring out how you don't program your child in the same way. You know, there are financial therapists out there today. In fact, there's a financial therapy association that a lot of these therapists are a part of. And I'm going to take a page out of T. Harv Eker's book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. But in that book, he said, if you want to change the fruits, you must first change the roots. And he gives this example of like, if the tree of your life is producing apples and you want it to produce oranges, you have to go back and change the roots of the tree in order to create new fruits. I think about that a lot when I'm talking to groups and I ask the question, what did you hear growing up? And one of the common answers that I've heard lately is, you don't need that. That they heard growing up, you don't need that. Every time they went out, could I get this? You don't need that. You don't need that. You don't need that. Well, a kid hears you don't need that hundreds of times a year. What they start to believe is, I'm going to deny myself the things that I want, but I'm told it's not a need. So I'm either going to deny myself or I'm going to go down this other path where I deny that logic. And I go, when I start making money, I'm going to buy whatever the hell I want. And if you get a credit card, that's entirely possible. You can go buy whatever the hell you want. And so that's how we get 18 to 25 year olds that rack up thousands of dollars in credit card debt. Because they're like, you know, my mom or dad told me I didn't need stuff growing up, but now I'm going to show them. I'll just, if I want it, I'm going to buy it. So I think deep down, we have to get to the heart of why do we function the way we do? If we're a hard couponer, you know, are we doing that because we grew up in a household where mom and dad both made a limited amount of money and they had to coupon? That may have been their truth, but it's not the truth today. And, you know, I mean, in the nature of full transparency, this is my situation at home. My wife grew up in a household where they didn't make a ton of money. The coupons were necessary. Today, she coupons like crazy. And I'm like, honey, you don't have to do that. I know, but I can't pay full retail. It just feels weird to do so. That's a quote unquote trauma. That was a story that was told early on that she's adopted and sort of put into our world.
Yeah, I mean, that hits home for me too, but in a slightly different way. I grew up in a very financially stable house, and my dad was in the financial industry. And I mean, I'm very fortunate, but I did not have to worry about money as a kid. In fact, I didn't even really think about money as a kid. And then when I went to college and, you know, they were giving away credit cards like candy, and I got a credit card, and yeah, I was one of those who racked up, I don't know, whatever the available balance was on it, $1,000 or something like that. And, you know, it took me a long time to understand, like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
And I think it was because even though my dad was in the financial industry, we didn't talk about money from a practical standpoint, you know, the way you're talking, like the experiment that you did with your kids, we didn't talk about money that way. And I also got this feeling of status, that money equaled status. And so in order for you to feel worthy and to feel like, you know, people wanted to be around you, be your friend, you needed to spend money. And so I just went out and did the thing that, you know, I thought was modeled to me. And it really wasn't until all of these years later that I've done sort of this deep work on the psychological side of money and all of this. But I would imagine for the average person, it is hard to figure out these patterns and to figure out what they mean and then how to actually undo them.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly difficult. Unless you were equipped with the kind of questions that I know you provide on the show a lot, and I'm trying to do in speaking engagements all across the country, is asking people like, hey, let's talk through your early money memories. Let's talk about what your parents or grandparents or whomever your influences were told you growing up. And what are those messages that stuck with you? And then lastly, and I know this is a component of the show, is the relationship to money, because we all have one, whether we know it or not. It's shadow, or it's, you know, right there in front
of
us.
Right in your face, yeah.
Yeah. And I think if you're asking yourself those critical questions and going deep on that topic, you'll realize what it is. As an example, my sister told me on vacation when I think I was 6 years old, And I had lost a $20 bill that my dad had given me for snacks and souvenirs and stuff like that. And she said, how could you be so careless with money? And I remember having dug into that memory, like I felt that. I felt the, oh, I'm careless and I must be careless with money. And it sort of carried me through my high school and college years. And it ended up me having $8,000 in credit card debt when I graduated from college. And a lion's share of it was spent at a place called Shag Nasties. So don't judge me.
I don't even want to know what you bought at Shag Nasties.
A lot of fishbowl drinks, I have a feeling. But, you know, we all have one like that. It could be, you know, your J. Crew habit or your whatever it is. We spent money like that because it was about status or it was about treating our friends to drinks, in my case, because I wanted to be the cool guy who looked successful. We all have it. We got to dial into it and figure out, all right, what was it about that I was going for? And was that someone else's truth? Is it the truth? And what is my truth going to be moving forward?
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. All right, Adam, it's time to play Your Relationship with Money is Game. So question number one. Let me pause there. Okay, question number one. What would it be? I worded this wrong. Let me say this over. All right, question number one. If you had to describe your relationship to money as a monopoly piece, what would it be?
This is a tough question. You know, it's funny. I had two images in my head because they're the only two pieces that I really like am drawn to when I play Monopoly. One is the iron, because I was taught to iron when I was a kid, and I still enjoy it. Like, it's very therapeutic for me to do that. And I think I would say because I like to keep my bills crisp, you know, in my wallet or in my, so that would be the iron. But the real answer is the sports car. And the reason that I think that signifies my relationship to money is money is always flowing for me. And I never see it as a stopped vehicle. So I've always believed, or have long believed, that money comes easily and frequently. And it's like driving a car. It just has motion all the time. Most of the time through my accounts, but it likes to get parked certain places from time to time as well.
Number two, what's your biggest money mistake that you wish you could get a do-over for?
My biggest money mistake. And I think this is one of those probably experiences that most people have had or will have, because failure is the world's greatest teacher. You know, in life, we get our tests first and our lessons second. I bought a piece of real estate at an auction, and I was fairly early on in my real estate investing career, but I thought I knew what I was doing. And I bought the money pit, and it was disastrous from a partnership perspective, from a real estate perspective. I learned a lot of really valuable lessons, but if I could buy back the time and the decision I made, the money I put into that, I would be money ahead big time. So I would say that's probably my biggest mistake, was that one property. I've since bought others that have been good deals, but that one, yeah, big mistake. I'd take that one back in a heartbeat.
All right. Guilty money splurge that you are just never giving up.
My guilty money splurge is a car wash subscription. I love getting my car washed, and I love having a clean car and having it vacuumed out and all that. So I think I pay, it's like $27 a month or something like that. But I literally will wash my car 3 or 4 times a week. And I don't know what it is. Just, I like having a clean car. I'll never give that up.
All right. Last question. What is the last thought you had before this conversation about money?
The last thought I had, this is funny. I was traveling yesterday, and I mentioned I'd been doing these events with Young Beginning and Small Farmers. And I was in Columbus, Ohio earlier this week. I flew home last night, and I flew through the Charlotte airport, and they have a beautiful American Express Centurion lounge at that airport. It's a great, great place. It's like my respite. Whenever I'm going through an airport, it's just nice to duck into one of the lounges, and it's quieter and all those things. But they have a wonderful buffet. And they have these great cappuccino machines in there. So I know what I'm going to have every time I go in. I'm going to go have a buffet. I'm going to have a couple desserts. I'm going to have a really nice cappuccino or latte from the machine. And I always think about what my membership to Amex costs and how much of that am I getting back when I go do these, you know, go through these lounges. It's always, I always feel like I'm money ahead. So it doesn't matter how much the membership to Amex is. I feel like if I go through at least 4 or 5 lounges a year, I'm like, I'm good. I'm money ahead on this deal.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisterfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right. Daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts, and remember, stay safe.
Talking about money is hard. You know this already. All over the world, people are taught to never talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. On 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meeting from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines, host and financial conversationalist Carl Richards will remove money from that list by having frank, funny, and often difficult conversations about money, the kind we're all told not to have, with guests from all walks of life. In each episode, Carl will invite a new guest to answer the question, what does money mean to you? Their answers will reveal much more than their attitudes about money, spanning revelations about identity, community, faith, family, and the true meaning of wealth. Tune in to hear deep conversations about money and the meaning it holds in our lives. You can find 50 Fires on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
So do you think if you are a parent and you do this, maybe your own version of this experiment where you start having kids pay for virtually everything or a portion of everything, and maybe they're using cash, so there's a little bit more of a like tactile component to it.
Yep.
Do you think it's possible to raise kids that are emotionally, at, let's just say, best case, like neutral when it comes to money?
I do. And I've seen it happen dozens of times in people that we've worked with. I obviously used my kids and continue to use my kids as guinea pigs. But the Monopoly exercise was like the first domino that fell in a whole series of dominoes that led them to who they are today. So someone that a parent today that's raising a child that begins putting cash in their kids' hands and is using the right language, and this is part of it, Shauna, is I think you have to say or be mindful of what you're saying to your child in the sense of not using words like we're broke, we can't afford it, you know, those kinds of things. We're using language at home and have forever. That's not in our budget right now, or that's not something we're planning on spending for, or that's something we save for over a period of time. So, you know, yes, we could get it, but we're not going to get it right now, because I never wanted my kids to believe that there were things we couldn't afford. It's we choose not to do that because that's not it's not an efficient use of our money right now. And I think in the use of cash in hand, the kind of language we are using around our kids, helping them understand delayed gratification, saving and investing, there were little micro lessons along the way that have led them to be really capable teenagers and 20 somethings now. My daughter's 20, that can stand on their own 2 feet financially because they understand what life costs and they understand how money works and they understand investing. But all of those lessons along the way were taught from the age of, you know, 6 or 7 to 17. And I absolutely believe a parent that does that today will raise kids who stand on their own 2 feet financially.
There's a stat that says, a scientific stat that says that by the age of 7, your money habits and your money identity really are more or less
set,
formed, yep. Yep. Set in stone. I've had people argue with me about this. I'm like, this is scientific evidence.
Right.
And so obviously the earlier, the better that you can start, you know, some of these lessons and start doing some of this stuff with your kid. If you're listening now, your child is older.
Yeah.
Do some of these things still work? Like, can we counteract maybe what we didn't teach them as, you know, 0 to 6 years old?
Yeah. Electroshock therapy is what it requires, you know? No, you know, what started this all for me, candidly, and I'll circle back to answer that specific question. But I met a young guy named Carlos, who was a student at an event where I was speaking at a university. And he waited until the very end of the line to talk to me and came up and he said, hey, everything you said resonated and I just want to share my story. And he, at 15, his parents said, Carlos, we'll give you $50 a month. We'll give you food and we'll give you shelter, but everything else is on you. And I was like, bro, what was that like? And he said, I hated my parents for a year because I felt they were being punitive, where all of my friends, you know, their parents were whatever they needed, they were providing. And I had this limited amount of funds to go to games and to pay for my car insurance and all those kinds of things. And I said, and where are you today? And he goes, I'm 20 years old. I got a full ride scholarship through a community college. So I got 2 years paid for. I'm applying for every scholarship I can find to get the rest of my 2 years paid for at a state university. He goes, I have 20 grand in the bank. But today I credit my parents for making me financially responsible because they basically burned the ships. They were like, it's on you, pal, you know? And so I think it's possible for parents of older kids, teenagers or, you know, late teenagers, teenagers even. However, what I think you have to do is you have to have the reset button conversation. And this is where most parents are falling down. Is they'll hear something like this on a podcast and they'll go back and they'll go, you know what? Now it's on you. And this is what's going to happen. It feels very punitive. And instead, what we could do is go back at home and say, hey, I want to have a reset button conversation. For a long time, you have relied on us to cover all of your expenses. And what we're going to do from this point forward is you're going to get X amount of dollars. And you're going to make your own decisions on these specific things. And the reason we're doing this is we want to be here to support and guide and coach you, but you need to be able to make these decisions on your own by the time you're 18. And if you have that reset button conversation, it makes it a lot easier and more palatable for a kid to go, oh, okay, I get it. And they might even go, this is cool. I like this idea. Because up to this point, they may have been felt like they were the puppet and you were the puppeteer as a parent. You know, going, no, right. I'm not going to give you that money because,
yeah, so
you know,
and then it like just, some ownership, right? Some control.
Totally. And this is one of those emotional hot buttons, I think, with money is it just feels like control. And I don't want to control my kids through finances. I want them to make their own decisions, but I do want to be there to coach and guide them. So let's equip them to do that early. So we're not doing it at 23 when we're like, dude, you got to get off the payroll here. This is too, your mom and I want to retire soon. This is BS.
What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got our eyes on the Bahama vacation and you're here.
Totally. Yeah. I don't want to pay for your health insurance. Still, you have a job, buddy.
Well, you've created this really unique career and you go and I know you've done over something like over 1,000 talks to organizations and universities and really helping people with kind of these tough subjects around money. I'm curious, you know, what have been like some of your most favorite talks that you've given?
Oh, it's such a great question because there's something that's super present for me. And I'm based in the Midwest. I do a lot of work in the ag industry. And most recently, I've been asked to come and speak to young, beginning, and small farmers. And what's most kind of profound about working with them is they are raised in an environment which is hyper, hyper entrepreneurial. I mean, imagine building your business and the one main component of the equation for this working is something you have no control over, which is the weather. Can you imagine how, it's like, imagine if you were building a business and the internet was super spotty and you're trying to build your business, not knowing whether or not the internet is going to work today or not.
Yeah. This is how farmers operate. Dial-up days, right?
Totally. Totally. And so they're raised in an environment where, you know, a hailstorm or a windstorm or a drought or a flood could happen and it could knock them out for 2 or 3 years, but they keep coming back and they keep doing it again and again and again, getting better and better at it. And yet money is largely still a taboo topic in that world. Grandpa or grandma who's run this farm for years and years isn't telling their grandson or granddaughter how much money the thing makes. All they know is, I need $3 million when you buy me out because I got to retire on something, you know? So those are some of the programs I love to do because we're starting to like get into the heart of how can this generational wealth be protected and created with security into the future. And it's all done through having these kind of really hard, heartfelt conversations about what was your money story during the Depression. That may have been the truth back then, but it's not the truth today. And, you know, you can't trust bankers, may have been good logic back in the 20s and 30s. But today you have to trust your banker because they equip you to go buy land and buy equipment and all of that stuff. So it's just, it's awesome to be in a position, as you know, because everyone's talking money. If they're not, they should be. We should all be talking about this around the dinner table and with our friends. And I don't need to know how much money you make, but I want to know, like, what was your early money memory and how did it seed how you interact with money today? What did your parents do for allowance? And how can we, you know, manage and manipulate that to work in our situation? I think all of these are really important and what I get to do on a regular basis.
You bring up generational wealth. And, you know, I think not everybody listening who has a kid is going to get some sort of inheritance or is going to get the family farm or is going to get the family house or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of parents wondering, how do I effectively build some sort of wealth for my kids, something I can leave them? There are obviously, you know, 529 plans to help with college. So maybe kids don't have, you know, they're not burdened with student loan debt. I know there are some Roth IRAs that you can set up when a kid is young so they can, you know, start have some money. Is there anything else you can do as a parent to try to give your kid a little bit of a, you know, financial leg up?
I think there's a number of things. And off the top of my head, you know, you mentioned the 529 plan. One of the situations that I've found among recent grads well into their 40s and 50s is if there was student loan debt there and they didn't, you know, go after it, you know, like what I like to say is like a laser through a cheese log. Let's just, you know, eviscerate that thing. They'll have it forever and it becomes this backpack that they carry around full of bricks while they're running their marathon of life. And they're just like, yeah, this is so heavy. I wish I could take it off. So for young parents, especially, $25, $50 at a time, I know it doesn't seem like much, but that put into a 529 plan when a kid is super young can grow to be a significant amount of money by the time they're ready to go to college. And then on that note, when our kids were very, very young, when they were first born, I don't think I pioneered this idea by any stretch of the imagination. But I was reaching out to my aunts and uncles and my grandparents, my kids' grandparents, my parents, and saying, hey, my kids have all the multicolored playthings they can stand, and they don't even understand what you're giving them. Like, there's so many stuffed animals. They don't need any more stuffed animals. But if you would put $25 in this 529 plan, it's going to make a world of difference for them down the road. And today, you know, I have two in college, one who's going to go. But those 529 contributions, when they were 0 to 5, have grown to be an amount that is enough to pay for at least 2 or 3 years of school for my kids. And I'm very proud of them. They're going to be done with school with zero debt. That was one of the things that I said you will come out of school and have no student loans, whether that's on us or on you or a combination thereof, that is the goal. And they'll all finish their bachelor's programs, no debt. And my daughter's getting her master's degree starting next year, but we'll have the full thing paid for through assistantships. And I think that's generational wealth, is setting an expectation for, like, you're not going to finish school with debt, whether that's through scholarships or the family's going to figure out how to make it work. And you keep sharing that idea with, you know, with your kids. That's a component, whether you're like, hey, I'm going to leave you $10 million or I'm going to leave you $100,000, but you're going to know how to manage it. All of those become components of generational wealth.
So let's say you were given a magic wand, right? And you could, like, prescribe the quote unquote, like, right way to teach your kids about money for all the parents listening.
Yeah.
What does that look like? Like, what is that prescription?
The prescription is to be, number one, and this is kind of like high level umbrella statement, is to be as transparent as you feel comfortable being with your kids about how much life costs, about how much there is left over after the costs of life. Because what is happening for most parents, again, this idea of, I love my kids, therefore I don't want them to struggle, is I'm going to shield them. They don't know how much the house payment is. They don't know how much the car insurance is. They don't know how much groceries cost. And for the longest time, we would play this game at dinner when we went out to eat. And I would say to my kids, how much does it cost to go to USC in California? Yeah, a lot of money. How much do you think it costs to go to Notre Dame a year? What do you think the cost to go to Iowa State University is, which is our state, you know, local state university? And I would ask them these questions because I wanted them at 8 and 10 and 12 and 15 to have an understanding of how much life costs. I would say, hey, we just ordered 3 pizzas, 4 sodas, a beer, and we'll have to tip. What will the final bill be? Do the quick math in your head, including the tip. And then they would guess, and I go, who got closest at the end? Because I want them to know if the 5 of us go out to eat, it's going to be $55, $60 by the time it's all said and done. And as those lessons were imparted on my kids, and we'd go on a vacation, not that I want to go, hey, this vacation costs $12,000, but they would have a sense of, like, hey, Dad, I know that the hotel's a lot, the plane tickets are a lot. Is it okay if I get this? Or we would be on vacation and I'd say, hey, we're not going to do sodas at every meal, because if we did that, it's adding an extra $800 on, you know, over the course of our trip. My kids understood that. And I think there are some families that they're just like, yeah, whatever. And then they wake up one day and they're like, how did we get $30,000 in credit card debt? Because it was just whatever. And the kids didn't know and didn't care. So I think be as fully transparent as you can be. If I'm going to wave a magic wand, because your kids from 0 to 18, they need to understand how expensive it is to raise them and understand what those costs are moving forward on their own.
I don't have kids, nor am I going to have kids, but I am really passionate about arming you with the tools you need to teach your kids how to get in good relationship with money from the get-go. Can you imagine, just for a second, how we could change the world just by changing the way kids learn about money? I think it's pretty groundbreaking. And Adam's advice is worth a try. I honestly really wish my parents would have used some of these tactics, or would have at least helped me understand how to spend and save my money more mindfully and, you know, how to work through all of these emotions. If you want to learn more about Adam, you can find him at adamspeaks.com. I will also link his TED Talk right in the show notes. It is definitely worth a watch. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with some family and some friends. Get more people into our ETM universe so we can keep the show continuing to grow. As always, you can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guests, as well as, please, yes, go over, give our sponsors some love. They are the ones that keep this show going. I will see you back here in a few days, my friends, for a brand new episode.